WOR's airing of this program constitutes neither an endorsement of the products offered or the ideas expressed.
Welcome to Health Navigator, the show that helps you understand the latest healthcare trends and learn to separate the sound health advice from the hype. Now, here's the host of Health Navigator, Abe Casbo.
Hey, welcome everybody. This is Abe Casbo and you're listening to Health Navigator. We've been off the air for a couple of months, and we're just so happy to be back here at WOR. So Health Navigator is sponsored by Raritan Bay Medical Center in Perth Amboy in Old Bridge, New Jersey. Check them out at rbmc.org or at facebook.com/myrbmc. And look, the show is designed to give you, to provide you with the tools and information you need so you can take control of your health and wellness. And so for those of you who don't know, we'll have physicians on, we'll have practitioners on, we'll have chefs on, but all around the topic of health and well-being. And oh, by the way, we'll do it in plain English, right? So thanks so much for spending your Sunday night with us, the next hour with us. We're really, really honored to be here. Hey, look, school is back. We had a great summer. Personally, my wife and I, we took the kids to Ireland back, about a month ago, and we had a great, great time. It was unbelievable. It rained some of the time, but I have to tell you, I don't know what they say about Irish food, but Irish food is absolutely fantastic. The cuisine is top-notch, and we really, really enjoyed ourselves. And, now we're back into the swing of things with school. Summer was just way too quick. But certainly, I got to say, the last 2 weeks of July were unbelievably beautiful here in New Jersey and in the New York area. So they were actually like spring-like, and we get no spring anymore. So, I, for one, appreciated that. Football season starts, and it's already started. I'm just excited about the Jets. I don't know about you. I'm a Jets fan. I know I should go into some kind of mental rehabilitation, or people kind of scream at me for being a Jet fan. But hey, listen, I got to stick with my Jets. We're gonna have a great season this year. Look, let's get back to the show. I know I'm a little sidetracked, but look, we're gonna have a great show this week. We've got the president of the medical staff at Raritan Bay Medical Center, Dr. Kumar Dasmapatra, on with us, and we're going to be discussing the latest technologies in the surgical suite. And we're also going to be talking a little bit about the ethics surrounding newer medical technologies and surgical technologies. We're also going to be joined by spine surgeon Dr. Sirpad Walaker, and we're going to go into herniated discs and scoliosis and talk a little bit about pain management when it comes to herniated discs. So, and by the way, we're also going to have Maureen Ali on. And Maureen Ali is a nurse navigator at Raritan Bay Medical Center. And we're going to talk about the increasingly important role of nurse navigators and what they are doing to help patients get better and navigate the healthcare system more efficiently. So we're really excited about today's show. Please stay with us. We're going to be right back after these words from our sponsors.
Is joint pain, limited mobility, or a sports injury stopping you from living your life? At the Human Motion Institute at Raritan Bay Medical Center, their goal is simple: to return you to normal function as quickly and safely as possible. Their team of experienced orthopedists, surgeons, and physical therapists, along with your very own nurse navigator, work with you to develop a customized treatment plan to get you back to the activities you enjoy. By combining extensive clinical expertise with a compassionate, caring treatment philosophy, they have created a program known for its quality of care. To learn more about the Human Motion Institute at Raritan Bay Medical Center, call 855-566-8466. That's 855-566-8466, or visit www.rbmc.org.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Abe Casbo, and you're listening to Health Navigator right here on WOR. Health Navigator is proudly sponsored by Raritan Bay Medical Center in Perth Amboy in Old Bridge, New Jersey. And we have a very special guest on with us today, Dr. Kumar Dasmapatra. Dr. Dasmapatra is the chairman of the medical staff at Raritan Bay Medical Center. Dr. Dasmapatra, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Dr. Patra, please, let's talk a little bit about, you're a general surgeon. If you could tell our listeners a little bit more about you, that would be terrific, and then we can go right into our discussion.
Yes, I am a general surgeon. I have special training in cancer surgery, and I do a lot of laparoscopic surgery also at the same time.
Mm.
I've been in practice in private practice for about 25 years, and before that, I was teaching at the medical school for about 10 years.
Wow, Dr. Dasmapaj. So, as a surgeon, people, when I talk to people on the street, some of my colleagues were always interested in the latest advances in medicine. But as a surgeon, what are you seeing on the surgical front in terms of advances?
The advances in surgery are truly spectacular, and let me just take a moment back to tell you that what's happened in the last 25 years in surgery and recent advances is pretty close to an explosion compared to what happened over the last 100 years before that. In general, when we were training back in the 70s and 80s, things never changed. We did the same operations. We just knew how to read the books, and it was the same things every day. Patients stayed in the hospital for a week, 10 days for minor things.
Right.
But techniques have changed. Devices have changed. The way we operate has changed. So in the last 25 years, I do not recall any period in the history of surgery that has seen such major advances.
Ready?
Right.
Okay, here we go. So, Dr. Dasmapatra, if you can give us specific examples of those technologies that have really moved surgery forward from the points that you were talking about.
Sure. Almost every discipline in surgery, all the subspecialties, we have all seen tremendous advances. It would be impossible to list everything in a short period of time.
Yeah.
But we all know what has happened in heart surgery. We all know that patients who had heart attacks, many of them didn't live until the open heart surgery started. And now we know that open heart surgery, with replacing the arteries in the heart with veins or whatever, that may not be the best thing to do. So we moved on to putting stents in the artery, and that can be done without any surgery, with just a needle puncture.
Right.
We all know that when we had leaking valves in the heart, that required a major, major operation. And now we know that even that can be repaired with just a puncture in the vein and have a valve replaced. We've all heard about heart transplants. Things like this were not heard of in the past. And these are major, major innovations that have occurred in heart surgery. If you look at patients who have aneurysms, they would die from surgery. But now we can fix that again by putting a little catheter through the groin and putting a stent to prevent the aneurysm from rupturing.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Health Navigator right here on WOR, and with me, my special guest today is the chairman of the medical staff at Raritan Bay Medical Center, Dr. Kumar Dasmapatra. Dr. Dasmapatra, based on what you're seeing now with this exponential movement in surgical technologies, where do you see this going?
There is no limit, I believe, in what happens to innovation. We all know where we started with doing open gallbladder surgeries, and now we do them in tiny little incisions. We all know that not only are we doing it with tiny incisions, we're actually using robots now to do surgeries. We have we can replace joints with new material. We can do spine surgeries with tiny little incisions. All that is happening now. The question of where we go in the future is actually fascinating, because I truly believe that there is no limit.
Yeah.
We all know what happens. We talk about stem cells. We talk about making organs from stem cells. So is it feasible that someday we will have an organ like a new liver or a new heart or a new set of lungs just from stem cells? It's very, very possible. And then all you need to do is to get your old organ out and put a new organ in.
Mm.
Innovation, again, things that we read in fiction, can we genetically engineer children to be superior?
Right.
So is that possible? Yeah, we can modify defective genes today. So can we really program fetuses, you know, to become superior to other children who can't have that genetic programming?
Right.
You know, we use computers to control our brains. We use computers to control our heart, pacemakers to control our hearts and spines. We use computers to give us artificial limbs that can actually move just by thinking about moving them.
Right.
So in my opinion, all that is not fiction anymore. We have really gone to a point where what we can imagine can actually become reality.
How fast can you, I mean, are you foreseeing that technology going from, you know, from the drawing board, if you will, to actually being, you know, in patients, used in patients?
That is probably a good question because things don't happen overnight.
Yeah.
Industry is a leader in innovation. They come up with new ideas, come up with new products. Those products need to be tested by people. Once they're tested by people, then the dilemma becomes, you know, how do we take it to the operating room without really knowing if it works in humans or not? And that, those are some ethical dilemmas which we can talk about maybe later on.
Well, I'd love to talk to you about that, you know, when we come back on the other side of break. But I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Keep going.
So it takes several months, maybe several years, before an idea in the lab, in an industry, can really get to the operating room. And then, you know, the issues of, you know, is it really safe or not, I think is a big problem.
Well, we're seeing that with drugs, right? I mean, you know, we rush to get drugs to the market, and then, you know, something happens, right?
Right. I mean, there are many technological advances that don't take that long. You know, it is just a little... maybe a modification of something that we do. For example, laparoscopic gallbladder surgery. That did not take that long to get going into the operating room. When people realized that it can be done safely, it really exploded. It exploded in the private sector before even the academic centers knew what was happening. When we have good innovation, safe innovation with good results, I think that really takes off very quickly. But when we have complicated innovation, for example, robotics, everybody hears about how operations are being done by robots. But, you know, do we really know that it is better? We don't have an answer yet. Do we know that it is less expensive? Definitely not.
Right. Well, you know what? When we come back, let's continue our discussion. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors. We'll take a break and come back with Dr. Kumar Dasmapatra. We're talking about the ethical implications of all of this technological advances in medicine and surgery. Stay with us.
At the Center for Women at Raritan Bay Medical Center, they are dedicated to the special needs of women, a comprehensive approach to breast health, wellness, and disease prevention. With locations in Old Bridge and Perth Amboy, their newly renovated facilities combine the highest quality imaging technology with comfortable spa-like surroundings and a uniquely personalized level of care. They make it easy and convenient for women to receive state-of-the-art testing, including mammography, ultrasound, breast MRI, image-guided biopsy, and bone densitometry, along with various other women's health services from holistic medicine to lymphedema therapy. When you walk through the Center for Women's doors at Raritan Bay, you will work with your very own dedicated nurse navigator who will guide you through each step of the process, whether you're there for a screening mammogram, a series of tests, or treatment for a chronic condition. To make an appointment, please call 732-324-5270 and learn more at visitrbmc.org. And be sure to listen every Sunday night at 10 p.m. to Health Navigator right here on WOR Radio. The region's best-kept secret in medicine is a secret no more. Here's why some of the best minds in medicine are coming to Raritan Bay Medical Center to care for you and your loved ones. Nationally recognized cardiac care services. Raritan Bay Medical Center has received the prestigious Get With The Guidelines Heart Failure Gold Quality Achievement Award from the American Heart Association. The Center for Sleep Medicine at Raritan Bay Medical Center was named Best of 2012 by Sleep Reviews, Sleep Doctors, and Facilities List. If you have chronic insomnia, a better approach may be to remove the cause by changing your lifestyle. Call them to learn more about how they can help. Along with dedicated and Magnet Award-winning nurses, everyone at Raritan Bay Medical Center knows that they care for people, not patients. What are you waiting for? To find a Raritan Bay Medical Center physician near you, visit www.rbmc.org or call 1-800-DOCTORS.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Abe Casbo, and you're listening to Health Navigator right here on WOR. Health Navigator is sponsored by Raritan Bay Medical Center in Perth Amboy and Old Bridge, New Jersey. As I keep saying, look, you know, these guys deliver great information via Facebook. Check them out on facebook.com/myrbmc. And it is my pleasure to have with me on the phone Dr. Kumar Dasmapatra. Dr. Dasmapatra is the chairman of the medical staff there at Raritan Bay, and we were talking right before the break about all of these advances in medicine, in surgery. Dr. Dasmapatra, it does present some ethical questions. If you can grow a liver in a lab, if you can grow a human being in the lab, you know, what are some of the ethical challenges these technologies present as you see them?
That has been a major dilemma, you know, the moral and ethical questions that one is faced. We all know that, you know, innovation is the first resort of surgeons when he is in trouble. And, you know, people have always talked about, well, I was doing a case and then I didn't know what to do and then I came up with this idea and it worked.
Yeah.
That's innovation. You know, that can be taken to the extreme where we now have devices and technology to go along with the innovation. But the biggest dilemma that we face as physicians, surgeons, is, you know, how do you balance innovation with risk?
Mm.
You know, how do we learn that a new procedure is good? And should everybody be forced to work on a simulator of some sort, you know, before working on a human being?
Well, pilots do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Pilots can't fly a plane unless they've been on a simulator. So is this something that is feasible? Absolutely. In fact, the residents and new trainees that are coming on board, they are not going to be allowed to do these kind of procedures without actually going on a simulator and without somebody actually evaluating how they do on a simulator. It also may be possible that, you know, people may have to warm up on a simulator before doing a complicated operation. So the value and safety of new techniques is critical. When we adopt new technology before they have been tested in controlled settings, we do that because of maybe pressures from industry.
Right.
We do that sometimes because patients want it done. But, you know, sometimes patients depart from whatever they plan to do to just do something new without really learning about it, without
right.
really knowing if it is good or not. So these are moral issues that are not spoken about. It is critical that as surgeons and physicians, our obligation is to our patient.
Right.
Even the society may sanction something that we may do wrong or something that we have done in a hurry or something that we thought we were going to be good about. You know, where does that leave the patient? The bottom line is we all have taken an oath that we will not do no harm.
Right.
And sometimes one needs to just keep that in proper perspective.
You know, I go back to the Tommy John surgery.
Right.
Right. Where, you know, this very talented surgeon was basically, you know, I mean, he told Tommy John, this is absolutely experimental.
Right.
You know, let's give it a shot. And it worked.
Right.
You know, but that's procedural as opposed to now, you know, we're basically creating life and preserving life in the lab, you know,
right.
So, you know, you're introducing robotics. And those, I mean, and I don't really know how to evaluate it because are those different ethical questions or not?
They are an extension of the same ethical
right?
questions that we deal with every day. You know, do we get a consent for surgery? Do we tell a patient, look, I'm doing an operation that is a terrific operation, but I don't know what the results are going to be. You know, patients do need to be informed of that. You know, we may have departed from that on and off, but usually it is a departure because of an emergency where we are stuck and we come up with a new idea and, you know, it really worked.
Yeah.
But that does not happen all the time.
But you're also steeped in your profession's literature, you know.
Right.
And so what is the chatter, what is the discussion among your peers about this subject?
The discussion is precisely what we are having here today. Mm. The discussion is taking responsibility for innovation and making sure that we do no harm. I mean, our concerns for the interest of our patients should prevail over any interests of science or innovation. And the patient needs to understand that. The patients do demand, you know, well, look, I want my gallbladder taken out by a robot.
Right.
But patients then need to be told, look, we have no studies that show that that is any better. you know, there are some situations where robotic surgery may be good, but our patients need to be told that. You know, we can't, as physicians, we can't be driven because of demand by patients.
Right.
We need to be comfortable in what we can do. We need to be comfortable in our abilities. You know, just because somebody says, yeah, robotic surgery is good, can I just go and do a gallbladder with the robot? No, I need to be comfortable with my ability. And that's what I think surgeons need to understand, that you do what is within your means, and you need to be honest and frank with patients. Do not be driven by demand, by industry, or by the public.
I can imagine that the pressure must be great on both sides, right?
Yes,
and so
yes,
you're going to have patients coming in, and then you go to professional conferences and you're presented with all this technology.
Right.
But as somebody who actually has to perform that, because you're ultimately responsible, you know, to the patient and society.
Right.
How do you in your mind, I mean, is it really as simple as what you just said before? Hey, I'm ultimately responsible to the patients.
I hope so. I hope that all my colleagues feel that way.
Right.
Because without that, then we cease to become physicians.
Hmm.
Like I said, you can go to a meeting, you can go to a weekend course, come back and say, well, you know, I can take this colon out by laparoscopic surgery, not having any idea of what complications or trouble you might get into, and that would be the worst possible thing one can do. So one sees innovation, one has to evaluate it, see what kind of research it has gone through, see what kind of trials it has gone through, see what the results are, and then be comfortable, get the proper training, and do it. I think it would be disastrous if everybody just, you know, took a weekend course on any major advance and just came back and said, well, I'm ready to do it on Monday morning.
Right. Dr. Dasmopatra, if you were having a conversation with a loved one, a family member, and they said, hey, you know, I'm looking for a general surgeon, what would your advice be?
You need to look for a surgeon who has the experience. I don't think it hurts to ask a surgeon, look, are you familiar with this case? How many have you done? What kind of results do you see? What kind of complications do you see? It would be a big difference if somebody wanted to go to someone for a procedure that has been done only two or three times in the whole year versus somebody who's done it 100 times in the year.
Right.
I think experience matters. I think how the physician interacts with you matters. Honesty is of utmost importance. You know, you need to feel that the surgeon is truly being honest with you as to what his capabilities are.
Right.
And you need to feel that, yes, I mean, if something happens, you know that he's going to be there for you and he's going to take care of you.
Right. And if somebody wanted to reach out to you, contact you, how would they do that?
Personally, they can contact me through the hospital. The hospital has a hotline. My information is on the hotline. I think all the surgeons' information is there.
Right.
I am in the Yellow Pages. I'm sure that anybody can Google my name and they'll probably get my entire life history, which I don't even know.
Right. Well, Dr. Dasmopatra, it's been truly a pleasure to have you on the show, and hope to have you back on again.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we're going to be right back after these words from our sponsors. You're listening to Health Navigator right here on WOR.
If you're struggling with overcoming obesity or suffering from weight-related medical conditions, the Institute for Weight Loss at Raritan Bay Medical Center can help. With locations in Perth Amboy and Old Bridge, New Jersey, the Institute for Weight Loss at Raritan Bay Medical Center offers bariatric surgery and medical weight loss solutions to help you overcome obesity. Their team will guide you through each step of the weight loss journey, from choosing appropriate treatment options to nutrition education, lifestyle counseling, and ongoing support. The Institute for Weight Loss provides minimally invasive techniques such as gastric bypass, lap bands, and gastric sleeves. You're invited to join them for a free informational program at Institute for Weight Loss. To register, call 855-TIME-4ME, 855-846-3463, or log on to rbmc.org. For more healthy tips, be sure to listen to Health Navigator every Sunday at 10 p.m. right here on WOR.
Is joint pain, limited mobility, or a sports injury stopping you from living your life? At the Human Motion Institute at Raritan Bay Medical Center, their goal is simple, to return you to normal function as quickly and safely as possible. Their team of experienced orthopedists, surgeons, and physical therapists, along with your very own nurse navigator, work with you to develop a customized treatment plan to get you back to the activities you enjoy. By combining extensive clinical expertise with a compassionate, caring treatment philosophy, they have created a program known for its quality of care. To learn more about the Human Motion Institute at Raritan Bay Medical Center, call 855-566-8466. That's 855-566-8466 or visit www.rbmc.org.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Abe Caspo, and you're listening to Health Navigator right here on WOR. And we're really excited to be joined by Dr. Sripad Dwalekar. He's a spine surgeon at Raritan Bay Medical Center. Dr. Dwalekar, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Dwalekar, let's talk a little bit. Now, you're a spine surgeon. I'm sure you've seen your share of herniated discs. Can we talk about what is a herniated disc and what may cause them?
Yes, herniated disc is a condition which is quite commonly seen in orthopedic practice and spine surgeons' practice. The disc, as most of your listeners would know, is a cushion between the two vertebrae in the back,
mm-hmm.
and you have two vertebrae and a cushion in between, which is the disc. And there are several discs all across from the neck down to the sacrum to the bottom of the spine.
Right.
And they act as shock absorbers, and they provide for mobility in the spine. And when you bend forward and backward, there is some mobility that happens in these discs. And so more or less, they're like shock absorbers in your spinal column. So obviously, us being in the erect position makes it subject to a lot of wear and tear as one goes through life, and that wear and tear will cause some fissures in that disc.
Okay.
The disc itself, anatomically, consists of two parts. There is a nucleus pulposus in the middle, which is like a gel, and there's a firm portion around it called the annulus. And so in lay terms, I would liken it to like a jelly donut, if you will.
Okay.
There is a jelly in the middle, and then you have this firm portion that's holding the jelly together. And so what happens typically is that the gel inside allows for mobility in different directions and acts like a shock absorber. But as time goes on in life, the peripheral portion of it, you know, the firm portion of it will start to develop some fissures.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a
and then what happens process. What happens to that gel-like material when that fissure?
Yes. So once the fissures happen, the gel starts to track along the fissure.
Okay.
So instead of being right in the middle of the donut, if you will, middle of the disc, if you will, that gel will start to go along the fissure. And at some point, you may just do something simple, such as bending forward, trying to pick up a pencil from the floor, perhaps, and that gel will just squish right out of the fissure and come right into the spinal canal where the nerves are and the spinal cord is.
Dr. Dwalekar, you had mentioned before, we're erect, erect beings.
Yes.
What are you seeing? You know, if somebody's sitting down at their desk, if I'm desk bound all day, mm-hmm. what are the ramifications of that? Is there an issue? And are you seeing patients who'll come to you and say, look, you know, doc, I've got back pain. All I do is sit down all day.
Yes. The believe it or not, the sitting position has the highest load on the spine. So somebody with discogenic pain, typically the discogenic pain refers to pain arising from the disc itself. You may not have a herniation, but you could just have a worn down cushion that will also cause discogenic pain. And typically they will present with difficulty with sitting down. So if you have somebody who has pain purely on sitting and not too much on standing or walking, that may indicate just a worn down disc.
So what would you recommend? What would you recommend to a patient like that?
Yes, well, if you have pain, well, it depends again whether you have a herniation or not. If you
right.
have a herniated disc where the gel has actually squished right through the fissure and gone into the spinal column, that will start to push on the nerve, and typically that will cause sciatic pain. Commonly people refer to it as, sciatica, which runs all the way down the leg to the ankle. And that comes from the nerve being pinched in the spinal canal itself.
Right.
Now, if you have that kind of a symptomatology, then in that situation, typically majority of the patients will respond to conservative treatment initially, which is we typically will start out with some anti-inflammatory medications, some physical therapy,
mm-hmm.
Some muscle relaxants to, get the muscle spasm down. Avoid heavy lifting during that period. In the past, there used to be a recommendation for bed rest for days and weeks together, which is really a no-no at this point.
But right now, Matt, you're talking about best practices, and best practices are basically medication.
Well, to start out.
Okay.
Yes, to start out. And so what happens typically is that majority of the patients, I would say a good 70% of those with herniated discs, acute onset herniated discs, will get better with medications, with muscle relaxants, physical therapy, and modification of their lifestyle perhaps during that painful period. And within a matter of 4 to 6 weeks, most people would be significantly better that they can go back to their normal activities.
Okay.
Now, it's important to understand that once the disc herniates, nothing is going to suck it back to where it belongs again, you know. So it's out there, it's pushing, but the body compensates for it by forming some inflammation there, forming a little wall around it, if you will, and it'll shrink in size to some extent, pull away from the nerve, so the symptoms kind of subside to some extent. Now, if the symptoms don't subside in a matter of 4 to 6 weeks, despite the physical therapy and stuff, then typically we advise going through pain management in the form of epidural injections. And they significantly help out as well when other
now,
measures have failed.
Now, what happens, actually, before I get into that, if you've just joined us, you're listening to Health Navigator right here on WOR, and with me is Dr. Sripad Dwalekar, who's a spine surgeon, and we're talking about herniated discs. So now, what happens with those injections? Those injections actually, do they mask the pain? Or how does it work?
Yes, that's a very good point you bring up. Now, the whole idea in doing the epidural injection is the medication we inject is usually a steroid medication, which and the steroid is a very loosely used term, and there are all kinds of different steroid medications that are available through pill form and through injections as well. So in lay people's terms, people refer to it as cortisone. And you have a cortisone shot. And so the cortisone, there are different kinds of cortisones that are available for spinal injections. And typically we use something called triamcinolone or Kenalog, at least in my practice. And there are different Celestone and several other ones that are available as well. But typically the way this works is that these cortisone injections they're very powerful anti-inflammatories. So what typically happens is when the disc is pushing on the nerve, it's causing the nerve to swell up. And there is a lot of inflammation that's happening there, and that causes a lot of pain because the disc is like a foreign material to the nerve.
Right.
So when the inflammation is happening, there is a lot of swelling there, and there is only a limited amount of space available for the nerve. So there is a lot of pressure on the nerve as well, both physically as from the disc itself and also from the inflammatory material that's happening there. So the cortisone injection, the epidural, is a very powerful anti-inflammatory, and that will shrink the size of the inflammation, shrink the swelling down, cause the nerve to be calmed down as well, and thereby reduce the pain. So there is an inflammatory component of the pain, which is what typically is the majority of the pain in these cases, besides the physical pressure of the disc pushing on the nerve. So the way the epidural injections work is by subsiding the inflammation and sort of helping the body in healing itself, if you will.
Got it.
That's typically how it works.
So
I also wanted to say that besides the cortisone, we also have a little bit of local anesthetic, which is like a numbing medication that's mixed along with the cortisone that goes into the spinal column. And this is all performed in a state of the art way, under X-ray. So we are very, very precise as to exactly where the needle is going. We inject a little contrast material dye to make sure that it's flowing correctly where the medicine needs to go. And then once we confirm all that, then we go ahead and inject the medication itself.
Dr. Dwalekar, I'm sorry, I need to cut you off because we have to take a break.
Sure.
And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on the other side. Stay with us. We're going to be right back after these words from our sponsors.
The region's best-kept secret in medicine is a secret no more. Here's why some of the best minds in medicine are coming to Raritan Bay Medical Center to care for you and your loved ones. Nationally recognized cardiac care services. Raritan Bay Medical Center has received the prestigious Get With The Guidelines Heart Failure Gold Quality Achievement Award from the American Heart Association. The Center for Sleep Medicine at Raritan Bay Medical Center was named Best of 2012 by Sleep Review's Sleep Doctors and Facilities list. If you have chronic insomnia, a better approach may be to remove the cause by changing your lifestyle. Call them to learn more about how they can help. Along with dedicated and Magnet award-winning nurses, everyone at Raritan Bay Medical Center knows that they care for people, not patients. What are you waiting for? To find a Raritan Bay Medical Center physician near you, visit www.rbmc.org or call 1-800-DOCTORS.
If you're struggling with overcoming obesity or suffering from weight-related medical conditions, the Institute for Weight Loss at Raritan Bay Medical Center can help. With locations in Perth Amboy and Old Bridge, New Jersey, the Institute for Weight Loss at Raritan Bay Medical Center offers bariatric surgery and medical weight loss solutions to help you overcome obesity. Their team will guide you through each step of the weight loss journey, from choosing appropriate treatment options to nutrition education, lifestyle counseling, and ongoing support. The Institute for Weight Loss provides minimally invasive techniques such as gastric bypass, lap bands, and gastric sleeves. You're invited to join them for a free informational program at Institute for Weight Loss. To register, call 855-TIME-FOR-ME, 855-846-3463, or log on to rbmc.org. For more healthy tips, be sure to listen to Health Navigator every Sunday at 10 p.m. right here on WOR.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Abe Casboy, and you're listening to Health Navigator right here on WOR. And we're back with Dr. Sirpad Dwalekar. Dr. Dwalekar is a spine surgeon at Raritan Bay Medical Center. And before the break, if you were with us, you know that we were talking about herniated discs, and then we were talking about conservative treatment of spine surgery. But Dr. Dwalekar, you also wanted to talk a little bit about at what point does someone need surgery on their spine?
Yes.
Resulting from a herniated disc.
That's correct, yes. So the herniated disc, as I mentioned before, majority of the patients will get better with conservative non-surgical treatment, but there is a minority of patients, about 20%, 30% of those, who don't respond to any of this conservative treatment of physical therapy medications and the such. So in those situations, we have to go forward and approach it surgically. Wherein there are different ways of doing it, and most of us who are spine specialists will go about doing this in a minimally invasive fashion, which is through a tiny little incision. You can just put a small Band-Aid on that incision as well. It's outpatient surgery, and we just go in there and take the pressure off the nerve and take the herniated disc out. In a young patient, that usually suffices. You don't need anything more than that. And so once the pressure is off, the patient recovers dramatically. You'll find a difference right away after the surgery. And the patient's up and about. And
what happens when you take the disc out? What is the patient left with?
Well, what happens typically is when we take the disc out surgically, we don't take the entire disc out. We take the herniated part of the disc out. So whatever's pressuring the nerve is the part that we take out. So in effect, we're sort of shaving that part down. And then whatever is still intact and whatever still has a normal consistency to it and still has attachment to the rest of the bone, we leave it behind. So we don't necessarily take the entire disc out unless the patient requires a spinal fusion procedure, in which case, you know, besides taking the herniated disc out, we also clean up the space, take all the disc out, and then put in bone graft or cages and spacers and such if that's what is required in the patient's case. So each patient needs to have the surgery tailored to him or her.
So as a spine surgeon, I imagine you deal with scoliosis a lot. Can we talk about scoliosis, and can we talk about who suffers from scoliosis?
Yes. Scoliosis has been around for a long, long time, ever since we have been bipedal human beings walking on the feet. The upright posture is what led to a lot of the spinal issues through the generations. And so there's different kinds of scoliosis. The most common one that we come across in practice is something called idiopathic scoliosis, which is when children in their growing years will develop a curvature in the spine. And scoliosis essentially refers to curvature of the spine. The spine, mind you, has normal curvatures, which is perfectly normal. However, when that curvature becomes abnormal and starts to grow and starts to become worse and worse as the child grows, that's when it's pathologic, and so something needs to be done about it. So most commonly, the kind of scoliosis a spine surgeon would see in his or her practice is idiopathic scoliosis, wherein we don't know the exact cause as to why it has happened. So this kind of scoliosis typically will be seen perhaps in a child 10, 11 years of age. It still has 5-6 years of growth left, and during those growing years, if a scoliosis is detected in the 10-11 years of age, they will rapidly progress in some cases, and so that's why typically the child needs to be observed every 3 to 4 months by getting X-rays. We measure the curvatures and see how it's progressing. Depending on the degree of curvature, we decide whether the child needs a brace or not.
So in terms of treatment, I guess, and it depends on. So in terms of treatment, it could be a brace. What other forms of treatment do you offer somebody with scoliosis?
Yeah, so typically, if I were to give you a spectrum of the treatments available, now,
sure.
If I see a child with 10, 11 years of age, say, for instance, has a curvature, say, of 20 degrees, I would typically just observe that for now. I would probably have the child come back every 4 to 6 months, get x-rays as the growth proceeds and make sure it's not getting rapidly out of hand. So if I see a very rapid progression from 20 to 30 to 40 within a matter of months, then that's a very rapid progression where child needs to be braced very quickly. So we typically start to brace patients around 20, 25 degrees, and then once it starts to go beyond 40 degrees, then we tend to consider surgical treatment,
wow.
Especially if it's rapidly progressing. Yes.
Dr. Dwalaker, how pervasive is scoliosis, certainly in our area, in the New York metro area, New Jersey?
Yeah, it's not extremely common. It's not like all children are subject to this. Typically, you probably see this in about 1 to 2% of the population. And this is the idiopathic scoliosis, which typically seen in the children. And so there is a category of congenital scoliosis where the child is born with it. And there is another category of juvenile scoliosis, which is seen earlier. Instead of 10, 11 years of age, they're seen much earlier, from 8, 9 years of age or so. And there's a fourth category where you see adult scoliosis. And adult scoliosis is where a child with scoliosis, has been left untreated or did not require any surgical treatment, and that during adulthood, those curves will progress about a degree a year. So if at skeletal maturity in children it's around 16 years of age, they are left with, say, a curvature of 40 degrees, that curvature can get worse during the adulthood by about 1 degree a year. And so down the line, if they start to get consequences from the curvature being significantly worse, such as having difficulty breathing because
right.
of pressure on the lungs, decreased appetite, and having significant cosmetic issues with the way the spine appears and imbalance in the body, those kind of situations require surgical treatment.
Right.
And nowadays, we have lots of avenues for different ways of treating this surgically as well, through minimally invasive techniques, through doing thoracoscopies, which is going in through the chest and loosening up the discs in the front and correcting it from the front. And usually most people will require some sort of fixation with screws and rods to kind
right.
of straighten out the spine.
Dr.
And
Dwalaker,
that serves them very well.
That's terrific. Dr. Dwalaker, can I ask you, if you were giving advice to a family member on how they should choose a spine surgeon, what would your advice be?
Well, you want to see somebody who has undergone a fellowship in spinal surgery, and typically the fellowship in spinal surgery, for instance, I have gone through an orthopedic residency first and then went through a spinal surgery fellowship at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York, which is part of the Cornell Orthopedic Department. So you want
right.
to look at somebody who has gone through a formal spine surgery fellowship training program. And so they are qualified to do spinal surgery.
Terrific.
Other, the general orthopedic surgeons, some of them may perform spine surgeries, but it certainly is better to have somebody who's board certified and has gone through formal spine surgery training, has an extensive experience doing this. The more experience, the more you're going to be comfortable doing these kind of procedures, because this is very intricate, as you know.
Right.
It has a lot of potential for things going wrong and complications and
right.
stuff. So certainly you want to be in good hands for sure.
Dr. Dwalaker, if somebody wanted to, first of all, we're coming to the end of the segment, so I want to thank you for being on the show. But if somebody wanted to touch base with you, can you please give us a phone number where somebody one of our listeners can call you, or where our listeners can call you?
Sure. Well, I have a practice at Raritan Bay Medical Center in the Medical Pavilion. It's 3 Hospital Plaza, Suite 203, and this is in right next to the hospital itself in the Medical Arts Building. It's in Old Ridge, and they can certainly get in touch with my office. Telephone number is 732-349-8454. Again, the office number rather is 732-349-8454. And we are a Joint Commission accredited orthopedic practice.
Right.
And we have different specialties within our practice as well. And I primarily do spine surgery
right.
as well. So
thank you so much, Dr. Dwalaker. We really appreciate you being on the show, and we hope to have you back on again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your calling me on.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Is joint pain, limited mobility, or a sports injury stopping you from living your life? At the Human Motion Institute at Raritan Bay Medical Center, their goal is simple: to return you to normal function as quickly and safely as possible. Their team of experienced orthopedists, surgeons, and physical therapists, along with your very own nurse navigator, work with you to develop a customized treatment plan to get you back to the activities you enjoy. By combining extensive clinical expertise with a compassionate, caring treatment philosophy, they have created a program known for its quality of care. To learn more about the Human Motion Institute at Raritan Bay Medical Center, call 855-566-8466. That's 855-566-8466, or visit www.rbmc.org. At the Center for Women at Raritan Bay Medical Center, they are dedicated to the special needs of women, a comprehensive approach to breast health, wellness, and disease prevention. With locations in Old Bridge and Perth Amboy, their newly renovated facilities combine the highest quality imaging technology with comfortable spa-like surroundings and a uniquely personalized level of care. They make it easy and convenient for women to receive state-of-the-art testing, including mammography, ultrasound, breast MRI, image-guided biopsy, and bone densitometry, along with various other women's health services from holistic medicine to lymphedema therapy. When you walk through the Center for Women's doors at Raritan Bay, you will work with your very own dedicated nurse navigator who will guide you through each step of the process, whether you're there for a screening mammogram, a series of tests, or treatment for a chronic condition. To make an appointment, please call 732-324-5270 and learn more at visitrbmc.org. And be sure to listen every Sunday night at 10 p.m. to Health Navigator right here on WOR Radio.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Abe Casbo, and you're listening to Health Navigator right here on WOR. Health Navigator is sponsored by Raritan Bay Medical Center in Perth Amboy in Old Bridge, New Jersey. Check them out at rbmc.org and on Facebook at facebook.com/myrbmc. And I got to tell you, they do a terrific job with their social media, and just in terms of the quality of the information that's out there. Check them out on Facebook. You'll see what I mean. And they won't bombard you, by the way. It'll be good, relevant information. With me right now is Maureen Ali. Maureen is the bariatric nurse navigator for the Institute for Weight Loss at Raritan Bay Medical Center. Maureen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Abe. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks so much for being on the show. Hey, you know, I know you're the nurse navigator at the Institute for Weight Loss there at Raritan Bay Medical Center, but if you could share with our listeners, what is a nurse navigator and why is it important?
Basically, the nurse navigator role came about a few years ago. The need came up where patients just really need not so much a hand-holding, but someone to help guide them through the whole process of their care. Our responsibility is mostly to educate the patient and their family, to help coordinate their care across the continuum and support them and help them through the process to make it a little easier because, you know, we all know it can get very confusing at times for some of the patients, and we just sort of help them, guide them through, and get them done a little easier.
So you become, like, is it like a concierge, or you become the quarterback for when the patient, and when does that process start? Does it start when I'm in the hospital? Where does it start?
With me, with the bariatric program, it actually starts with their first phone call, because I answer the call line, the 1-855 time for me call line.
Mm-hmm.
Once they call me, I set them up for either consultations with their physicians or for the seminars that we have on a monthly basis. From there, once they come in for their seminars, I meet them. I also do their preoperative education.
Mm-hmm.
I work with dietitians who also do their counseling prior to their surgery, and I follow them through answering any questions before, during, and after surgery.
And so what does after surgery look like, and what would your role be after surgery as a nurse navigator?
I usually do follow-up phone calls to see how everything's going. If there's any issues, I help them contact their physician or help them contact the dietitians to make follow-up visits, make sure that everything's going well, answer any questions that they or their families may have, because the families are very involved, and they do need a lot of help and support. So I'm there to answer any questions and help guide them through anything they need to straighten out.
Can you take me through a particular case, obviously without, you know, mentioning names, but can you take me through a particular case that, you know, maybe recently or one that stands out where you've helped someone, you know, from point A to the time they got out of surgery and then after surgery?
Sure. Sometimes we have some patients who may be not from the area,
mm-hmm.
So I help them make sure that they have all their consults in place. There was one lady who wasn't sure how to find a psychiatrist or psychologist to help her with her psych clearance. I was able to give her physicians in her area,
mm-hmm.
so that facilitated it, got her through a little bit quicker. Otherwise, she would have had to wait a little longer and delay her surgery.
Right. And so is this a trend here in New Jersey? I mean, I know certainly Raritan Bay Medical Center has been on the forefront of this nurse navigator concept, but what's happening nationally? Is this being adopted nationally?
This is becoming a national trend because hospitals and the public sees this. There is a need for this. Again, like I said, people need some help and guidance to get through the system because it can be very convoluted, very confusing for them. And we just make it a little easier. There are nurse navigators in all different fields for women's health care, for orthopedics, for mm-hmm. cancer, oncology.
So is there enough data where we're finding that this nurse navigator concept is actually impacting quality of care?
There is. There's not a lot because it is a new field, but what it is showing is that it does help the patient. It does facilitate it. It does absolutely decrease the length of stay because the patients are coming in much more educated. They're prepared for what's coming, and they're prepared to take control of their own surgeries and their own care.
Can you explain for our listeners when you just said what is decreasing length of care, and then why is that important? I'm sorry, length of stay, and then why is that important?
Well, we all want to work on decreasing length of stay for many reasons, to help the hospital, of course, economically, but also for the patient's cost line, and also mostly for the patient's care. The longer you're in a hospital, the more chance there is of you getting sicker. So
right.
We want to get you through the hospital process as efficiently and as healthfully and quickly as possible. We don't want you being in a hospital longer than you have to be. So the more educated and the more aware you are of what needs to be done, the easier it is to help get you through the process and faster.
What are some situations or some calls that you've gotten where you've said, you know, hey, this is out of bounds, or it's not part of my job, or is everything that a patient or a family that, you know, concerned about within the realm of the job description of a nurse navigator?
Yeah, there's really not too much that's out of bounds. I pretty much get involved in anything that they need as far as, you know, through the hospital or helping them through the doctor's office or getting them information from other places. I had one gentleman who called me. He wanted information for his son, but the child was too young for bariatric surgery, so I was able to find him some information at Rutgers with healthcare there. So he was able to call them. They have a program for pediatrics there.
Hmm.
And that, you know, I get information by helping them, which helps me, you know, to get more information for other people who might need information. I'm saying too much information because that's exactly what we do. We give a lot of information. We make sure that they have everything that they need before they come to the hospital so that they are prepared.
Yeah. So now I know you're at the Institute for Weight Loss there, and if somebody is looking for weight loss surgery or a weight loss approach that you can also provide information to, how would they get a hold of you, Maureen?
They would call our call line, which is the 1-855 time for me call line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one that answers the call, so when they call, they're speaking directly to me. And I can give them whatever the information they need or set up appointments for the doctors or set up the registration for the monthly seminars that we have or for our support group. We have a monthly support group of patients that have had the bariatric surgery or are planning on having it.
Well, Maureen, thank you so much. You've been very informative. I really appreciate you being on the show, and we hope to have you back on again.
Oh, thank you so much, Abe. I enjoyed it.
All right. We're going to be right back after these words from our sponsors. Stay with us.
If you're struggling with overcoming obesity or suffering from weight-related medical conditions, the Institute for Weight Loss at Raritan Bay Medical Center can help. With locations in Perth Amboy and Old Bridge, New Jersey, the Institute for Weight Loss at Raritan Bay Medical Center offers bariatric surgery and medical weight loss solutions to help you overcome obesity. Their team will guide you through each step of the weight loss journey, from choosing appropriate treatment options to nutrition education, lifestyle counseling, and ongoing support. The Institute for Weight Loss provides minimally invasive techniques such as gastric bypass, lap bands, and gastric sleeves. You're invited to join them for a free informational program at Institute for Weight Loss. To register, call 855-TIME-4ME, 855-846-3463, or log on to rbmc.org. For more healthy tips, be sure to listen to Health Navigator every Sunday at 10 p.m. right here on WOR.
The region's best-kept secret in medicine is a secret no more. Here's why some of the best minds in medicine are coming to Raritan Bay Medical Center to care for you and your loved ones. Nationally recognized cardiac care services, Raritan Bay Medical Center has received the prestigious Get With The Guidelines Heart Failure Gold Quality Achievement Award from the American Heart Association. The Center for Sleep Medicine at Raritan Bay Medical Center was named Best of 2012 by Sleep Review's Sleep Doctors and Facilities list. If you have chronic insomnia, a better approach may be to remove the cause by changing your lifestyle. Call them to learn more about how they can help. Along with dedicated and Magnet award-winning nurses, everyone at Raritan Bay Medical Center knows that they care for people, not patients. What are you waiting for? To find a Raritan Bay Medical Center physician near you, visit www.rbmc.org or call 1-800-DOCTORS.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Abe Caspo, and you're listening to Health Navigator right here on WOR. Health Navigator is sponsored by Raritan Bay Medical Center. They're our sponsors, and they've been terrific. Check them out at rbmc.org and on Facebook at facebook.com/myrbmc. I want to thank the president of medical staff at Raritan Bay Medical Center, Dr. Kumar Dasmahapatra, who came on the show today, as well as Dr. Dwalaker. It's really nice to have a frank conversation about medicine. I'm certainly not a doctor, not a practitioner, but those folks are able to convey and communicate, and you could see how well they communicate with their patients, and I certainly appreciate that. Hopefully you got a lot out of that as well, out there, our listeners. What's really cool is having Maureen Ali come on and talk a little bit about the role of nurse navigators and how that's really changing nursing. I mean, nursing is actually the heart and soul of our healthcare systems, especially in the hospital environment. I mean, if you think about a hospital and how many times you deal with nurses, it's really an amazing thing to think about, because the nurses are the glue that basically hold everything together, and they're not just the people who are delivering the care. The nurse navigator role is the role of the nurse who's quarterbacking the care. So it's for me, it's really rewarding to hear that concept is out there, because the healthcare system here in the U.S., and frankly, it's got to be everywhere, is actually very confusing. I mean, it's not the easiest thing in the world as a patient or as a family member, as a mother, as a father, to go through our healthcare system. So that was really terrific. I really appreciated that segment with Maureen Ali. Look, next week, we've got a great show for you. We have Dr. Steven Goldberg. Dr. Goldberg is the chairman of the obstetrics and gynecology department at Raritan Bay Medical Center. And he's going to come on. We're going to talk about hormone replacement therapy. We're also going to talk about HPV prevention and vaccine and the new PAP guidelines in relation to HPV. So we're excited to have him on the show. We're also going to talk to the Senior Director of Nursing at Raritan Bay Medical Center, Mickey Patrick. Now, Mickey, we're going to discuss emergency medicine, but I'm also going to ask her about the continued role of the nurse navigator within that environment, because I'm curious, and I'd like to actually understand how that concept plays out in the emergency room. And our special guest next week is Chef Erwin Jovan. This guy works in one of the most exotic places in the world. He's the executive chef at Cotton House in Mystique. It's an island off of St. Vincent's. And he's going to be on the show with us, talk about healthy eating while you're traveling. So please join us next week for Health Navigator at 10 p.m., same time, same channel, right here on WOR. Thanks so much for being with us. I'd like to thank Christine Falco, who is our producer, Lynette King-Davis, who is our executive producer, and Raritan Bay Medical Center for sponsoring the show. Join us next week, folks. I'll see you. Have a great and safe week.
The preceding was a paid program sponsored by Raritan Bay Medical Center, a New Jersey-based hospital in Perth Amboy in Old Bridge, New Jersey. WOR's airing of this program constitutes an endorsement of neither the opinions expressed nor of the products offered.